But today what I'd like to do is I'd like to maybe, believe it or not, finish this parsha. And the reason I say that is, I don't mean finish, but as we said with this chumash, we're not going to go to every single pasuk because these are like long speeches, you know, it's not, and we're just going to tackle certain topics, and some of it will just, you know, sort of explain what's, you know, how it's flowing, which we'll see today. But we will also explore in depth two ideas today, which we'll see. So we'll start off just very quickly, just to give a bit of a context as far as what's going on. So as we said, the beginning of the Chumash, you know, we know Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking. This is his long speech. And he began his speech, as we said, with how Hashem took us out of Egypt. He described and the miracles. And really the goal was to take us into the land of Israel. Of course, one of the big goals along the way was that we should receive the Torah. So we should receive the Torah, and then from there we should have gone straight into the land of Israel. Now we all know, unfortunately, what happened. But sorry, before we get to what happened, that's where last week's shiur comes in. Because when they arrived at Mount Sinai and Yisro came, and he saw how Moshe Rabbeinu was standing all day judging them, all day, and you know, it was just impossible. That's when he gave the idea that they should set up a system of judges. And that's where that whole court system came out, and that's what we discussed last week. And in our parsha, Moshe for some reason chooses to go into depth, and we discussed why last week, about this whole concept of judges, and how first of all, how it all came about, and then also certain laws which pertain specifically to judges. Okay, but then Moshe Rabbeinu continues now back to the story, and he says, then we received the Torah, and then after we received the Torah, and now what I'd like you to do is to look into page 942, 43. This is, as we can see, still in that first chapter of Chumash Devarim. It's the blue book. If anybody has the blue Chumash, if not, you can just listen. So the blue Chumash, 942, 943. And over here, you can see it's still on the top of the page. It's discussing those judges. But then, if you look into Pasuk Yud Ches, which is verse 18, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "V'atzav ve'eschem, I commanded you on that day all of these things that you should do." And then, afterwards, verse 19, which is towards the bottom of the page, Vanisa, and they traveled mechayrev, from chayrev, which means after you received the Torah and spent those few months there. Interestingly, he doesn't touch upon the golden calf here. I think that comes next parasha. But here he just says, after they spent the time at Har Sinai, what happens then? Now they have to travel. And where did they travel? Vidneilech es kol hamidbar, and you traveled through the entire desert. But he doesn't just say the word desert. It's interesting. This is where you can see some details. It's interesting the details that he chooses to say now in his speech. He describes the desert. Hagadol v'hanoyra, right? This big desert, this awesome desert. Hahu asher isem derech har ha'emayri, that you saw on your way by the mountains of the Amorites. Kasher tziva Hashem alikeinu esanu, as Hashem commanded us. V'navay at Kadesh Barnea, and you arrived at a place called Kadesh Barnea. Now what's Kadesh Barnea? Kadesh Barnea is very close to the border, to where they could have entered the land of Israel, had they entered at that point in the first year, because this is more in the south. But we know what happened. But before we say what happened, he says, "Va'omra aleichem, I said to you, ba'asam ad har ha'emayr, you've come to this mountain that Hashem has given you." And then, if you look at the next pasuk, a very important pasuk chaf aleph, and this, I just want to share an interesting idea that when we read these psukim, it's true, this was a speech that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the last few days of his life, right? And it's thousands of years ago, this speech. And it's said to a specific generation, the generation who are about to enter the land of Israel. So we might think, what does it have to do with us? And we see the most incredible thing is that the psukim that were said then, you could imagine Moshe saying it to us today. It's just as relevant, if not more so, today than it was even then. And this pasuk here is absolutely beautiful. So he says, he said to them, "Re'ei nosan Hashem alikecha lefanecha. Look, Hashem has given before you es haaretz, the land." And what does he tell them? So in other words, from here, you can see the border and you can even see the land. You can see the beautiful land that Hashem has promised you. And he tells them, "Alei, so go up, rosh Reish, Kasher, Dibar Hashem Alekei Avisecha, so inherit it and conquer it, just like Hashem has told you, the God of your fathers. And look at these words, Al Tira Va'al Teichas, do not be afraid. This is Moshe Rabbeinu chooses to repeat that this is what he said to them at that time. But he also chooses to repeat their reaction. And I feel like everything is so relevant. It's like we could imagine, okay, so even just on the simplest level, it's exactly the same that's happening now. But even for us in our daily lives, every day, as we say, we wake up in the morning and we have our land of Israel to conquer, which means that we have our portion of the world that we are meant to take on, to somehow elevate, to somehow deal with, to bring more godliness. And every morning when we wake up, there is an element of anxiety that every person has, whether it's how am I going to cope today or what's today going to bring, everybody in their own way, depending on their circumstances, and will I have the strength and will I have the ability and will this come up or that come up? And Hashem, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't be afraid. And every day, and this is, I'm not saying this, like, we shouldn't take it in a way as a like, fate, you know, like some people say, oh, well, why would we bother? The truth is that for most of us, a lot of days and a lot of the time during the day, the next thing happens. And we resist. It's true we're getting the encouragement. It's true that the Moshe Rabbeinu is, the voice is there. But still, it's hard. We're still afraid. And we resist, just like the Jews resisted. And what do we say? We say to Moshe, let's send spies into the land, you know, as they said, because it's too scary. So we think to ourselves, maybe we can outsmart something, or perhaps we can avoid something that we really shouldn't be avoiding, or perhaps we hesitate and hope that something will happen so that we shouldn't have to face that which we will have to face, whichever form it takes. But it's all the same thing. It's a lack of trust. Now, this is not to say that putting us down, this is normal. That's what it's showing us. We shouldn't think that this just happens to me and everybody else is living this life full of confidence and trust. That's not the way it is. Everybody has one, in one form or another, is filled with these fears because it is scary. It is. And therefore, we do ask Hashem, send the spies, right? They sent the spies, Moshe Rabbeinu goes on to tell them. And this is the story that he's repeating now very much in detail. Again, because it's true, this is what we go through every day. That back and forth. In one moment, we have a feeling of trust and confidence, and the next moment, it seems to go. And he describes beautifully, I mean, there's some details here that are not even in the story itself, because when you retell, sometimes you can also, like looking back at something, you know, you see the reactions and you're also analyzing more the, if you want to say, what was going on in people's minds. So it's a little bit of a deeper look to what happened with the spies. And if you can see in verse 19, that's what we just read, right? They came, I just wanted to see in the encouragement. And then in Pasuk Chaf Beis, in verse 22, Vatikru v'nei'lai, you came close to me, all of you, Vataymru, and you said, Nishlecha Anashim, let us send men, Lifaneinu, Vayachperu lanu es haaretz, let us spy out the land, and then we will know which way we can go in. We always find different excuses and ways and reasons for our hesitation, and we also find not only excuses, but we justify ourselves, why we're not doing something that we should do, why we're not picking up the phone, why we're not going to visit, why we're not, whatever it may be that we're hesitating to do, we always have justifications in our mind. And here Moshe Rabbeinu is showing them, let's find a way, the best way that we can go up. And Moshe Rabbeinu describes very much at length something actually quite incredible. He says that I told you, of course you can do it. And what's the idea of that? We know this famous mashal, the analogy. Rashi actually gives it even in the story. If somebody goes to buy, he doesn't say the word car, I think camel, but now we would say you go to the, you know, you want to buy a used car. I know nowadays many people lease cars, but you buy a used car, it's cheaper. And you go to the car salesman, and we know car salesmen are not people that we necessarily trust, but whatever. So you're not sure, and you tell the guy what you want, and then you ask him, can I take the car for a test run? And the car salesman says, sure. And then you say, can I take the car from here to the Blue Mountains? And he says, sure. And then you say, can I take the car on a dirt road? And he says, sure. Well, then you start to realize he's obviously, this is a good car. Because he wouldn't be so eager and allowing you to test it so much Or can I take it to the mechanic? Sure. Well, then you know you can trust him. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Hashem said to them, sure. He said, I said, sure, you can send the spies, thinking that what you'll say is, if you're so like confident about it, we don't need to send the spies. We'll listen to you and we'll go in. But you didn't take it and you did send the spies. And we all know what happened. And they came back. And Moshe Rabbeinu describes how they cried all night and how it was such a terrible disaster. And now, one interesting thing that happens in Pasuk Chaf Zayin, I want to see in verse 27. This is a very interesting one because this one doesn't say. This is here, you can see the feelings, the strong emotion. Vateirognu ba'aleichem, and you were all like crying. You were gathered in your tents, but you were gathered in a way of bitterness and anger. Vataimru b'sinas Hashem oisanu. In Hashem's hatred, he took us out of Egypt. That's why he took us out, because he hated us. Wow, this is a very strong language. And Rashi explains that the way they felt towards God, they projected and felt that God felt towards them. Because they were resentful now that he's taking them here to a land which with such strong nations that in natural way, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to conquer. Not only that, but they were afraid, even if we would conquer, how much, you know, would we suffer along the way, right? As we know, and it's not simple. And they were afraid, so the fear turned them to become bitter, but it also twisted everything in their minds. And we know the very interesting thing that when we look to another famous pasuk that says, you know, our reflection is what we see back. You know, the way we look at another person is what we think they feel towards us. Sometimes actually we project our feelings on another. And when we have a positive feeling towards somebody else, we feel they have a positive feeling towards us. But when we don't, that's when we feel perhaps something that's not even there, some type of a resentment or anger that they have, and it might not even be there. It's only because we have it. And here Moshe Rabbeinu says, you said Hashem hated you. Why? Because you had that feeling to Hashem. You thought he doesn't have good interests at heart. Anyways, and he describes it strongly, and then we know what happens. They come back, and then, unfortunately, you cried all night, and you were destined to stay in the desert for 40 years. Now, there's one fascinating thing that we're going to go in depth in the top of your booklet. I just want to show you. But before we do that, Pasuk Lamed, look at verse 30. Even then, Moshe Rabbeinu says, he reminds them, even after they were crying and bitterly complaining, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say to them in verse 30? In Lamed, Hashem Elokeichem, Ha'olech Lefneichem, your God, who is walking before you, and as I say, this is eternal for us to read today, Hu Yilachem Lachem, he will fight for you. He's the one that actually not only is there accompanying you, but he will lead the war and he will fight for you. K'chol asher asa itchem b'mitzrayim le'enechem. All the miracles that you experienced in Egypt, he will repeat for you when you enter the land. Why does he mention that? Because we know in life, if somebody wants to reassure you, the best way is to remind you of an experience that you already had. It's like when you tell a child, you know, they're scared to get on the bike, but you say, just yesterday you rode it. So then they feel confident. If I did it yesterday, I can do it today. And it's the same thing with us. If we remind ourselves of the times that we did manage and it was okay, well, that will give us some sense of confidence and reassurance that we can do it. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them. You witnessed the miracles. It's not new for you. He will do it again, and he will fight for you. But you have to have that trust. And that's what he's reassuring them. But unfortunately, it didn't work. They were still afraid. And that's why they ended up in the desert for 40 years. But there's one important thing that happens here. So that's why in Pasuk Lamed Aleph and Lamed Beis, it says, in this desert, you saw that Hashem, oh, very beautiful, you saw how Hashem carried you. I'll show you, and let's look in the English here. It says it so beautifully in verse 31. This is on page 943. And in the wilderness, as you have seen, that Hashem your God bore you, as a man carries his son on the entire way that you traveled, until you arrived at this place. So now he's taking them back to where they are now, right? 40 years later. And he's trying to reassure them and tell them, 40 years ago you were afraid. Don't make the same mistake again. Now that you are about to enter the land of Israel, really, with Yahushua, don't be afraid. Because not only do you have Egypt to reflect upon, but you also have how Hashem took care of you these 40 years in the desert. How you had the clouds of glory. How you had the man. How you had the miraculous well of Miriam. So you felt, and it was a desert of snakes and scorpions. And nevertheless, you were protected. So those 40 years should have given you even more confidence of the love that Hashem has for you. And that's what you have to picture. It's actually quite beautiful. One of the reasons why Moshe Rabbeinu says it this way, like as a father is carrying his son, is because in life sometimes not only do we have to have the words ringing in our ears, but sometimes we have to have a picture in front of our eyes. We have to have an image in order to give us strength. And that's what we're doing here. We have to feel as if we are literally a child in Hashem's arms. That is sometimes what we need to give us the strength to go through our day. And that's how Moshe Rabbeinu paints the picture here. It's actually quite beautiful. Okay, but then Moshe Rabbeinu goes on and he comes to, I just want to see where it was, because we're going to go into what, now if you see, and then he, and then in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, so let's go to the next page. On page 946 and verse 37, there's an interesting twist that happened. So he tells them the only ones that didn't sin, as we know, that did trust, was Yehoshua and Kalev, and they're going to enter the land. And then in Pasuk 37, a very strange verse that comes in the middle of this whole topic of the Miraglim, of the spies. Gam bi hisanaf Hashem beglalchem. Also me, Hashem got angry. Because of you, he got angry at me, Moshe Rabbeinu says. And what did he say? Gam ata loisav Hashem. Also you won't enter the land. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a very strange pasuk, because Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to the Jewish people, the reason I'm not entering the land is because something, it sounds like something to do with the sin of the Miraglim, right? Of the spies. Moshe didn't do the sin of the spies. And not only that, but that's not when Hashem said he's not going into the land. Do you know when it was that he was told that he wasn't going into the land? Not until the 40th year, when he hit the rock. It's quite crazy to think. It actually makes it even more upsetting. It's like, you know, the whole time he thinks he's taking the, he knows he's going to wander, but he thinks he's going in with them. And then when Miriam passed away, that's when the well disappeared. That's when the story of the hitting of the rock happens. And that's why he didn't go into the land, because he hid it and didn't speak to it. So what's he saying? What's this? Where does this come in here? It sounds so strange. And also, why is he blaming the Jews? He's the one that hit it.
They didn't pray for him to go in.
Okay, Riva, that could be. That's an interesting one.
They didn't ask Hashem.
Okay, that they should have Moshe leading them in. That's a fascinating answer. Fascinating. I'm sure that's also true. There are many ways. That's a beautiful way to look at it. Unfortunately, that could be true. It's interesting because it does say that, in a certain sense, Moshe Rabbeinu to them was a little bit intimidating. Because in front of Moshe, you had to act a certain way. You know how it is sometimes, children even, they want to go somewhere without, let's say, the parent, or without the, because they want to do things that they don't want their parent to know about, or that the parent wouldn't approve of, so to speak. So in a sense, that could also be true, that there was this element, unfortunately, that the Jewish people felt, that Moshe Rabbeinu held them to too high a standard. So that is also true, because otherwise, why wouldn't they want their beloved leader to go in with them? They thought, and that's what it says about judges. Remember last week, sometimes we don't want such good judges, because we want to be able to bribe them. You know, we don't want such holy men being up there, because otherwise, we won't be able to have our way. But here we have many interesting commentators. So if you look at the first, yes, Sylvia, sure.
I commented before, and it's nitpicking, but who was Moshe actually talking to?
Yeah.
Because that generation had died. They
right.
had to die. They weren't going to go
into the land. So that's why you see he keeps...
The children,
yeah.
To the 20...
100%. Yeah. So you see how he keeps bringing it back to them. Because he's telling them, make sure that you don't follow that. That's why he keeps saying, and you shouldn't be afraid now. Because don't forget, they were the ones raised, they were raised by those parents who made that mistake. You see, so...
And the woman.
Exactly, exactly, the woman also. So you see how Moshe Rabbeinu, that's why he's repeating it all. Because it's, again, they have to be able to work through that they should be different. This generation has to be different. So, yeah, it's interesting, Sylvia. But yeah, but this is a harsh pasuk. Anyway, so look at the... As we say, the first page, I'm going to share something a little bit at the screen now, and I'll show you the first page of your booklet. Oh, sorry, that's not what I wanted. Let me just see. Share screen. Here we go. Okay. So I'll just do a little bit inside from this. Just magnificent idea. Moshe Rabbeinu, what's he saying here? What's going on here? One of these things is actually a very famous concept, which actually is a lot of times learned around Tisha B'Av time. Well, this whole story of the spies, that's when they cried, was Tisha B'Av. But I'll just show you. So on the top of that first page of your booklet, it's the Orach Chaim. I'll show you some of it. The Orach Chaim says, first he starts, Koshe, right? It's difficult. We don't find that Hashem got angry at Moshe about the Meraglim, the spies. That wasn't the problem, as we know. And then he quotes from the Ramban. Now, the Orach Chaim lived in the 1500s. The Ramban lived in the 1200s. The Orach Chaim was in Morocco and then in Israel, and the Ramban was in Spain. But so it's a few hundred years before. But many times, even though that it was a few hundred years, he still has a different opinion of how to interpret the Psukim. But he first quotes from the Ramban. And what's the Ramban's view on why Moshe Rabbeinu is inserting this and how this fits? And it's not even true, because it was a different sin altogether. So he mentions, in short, that the Ramban says that, you know, that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to the Jewish people, that was one terrible thing that you did, right? When you cried that night and you were afraid to go into the land of Israel. But it wasn't the only bad thing. You kept on upsetting me over and over and over again. As we know, what happened in the desert, every few minutes they found another thing to complain about. So the Ramban says, it's like a parent who, after, like, you know, the first time they're patient, the second time you're patient, the third time you're less, after a while you just burst. It's like, and it could be the smallest thing almost, and it causes, you know, say the straw that breaks the camel's back. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, according to the Ramban, Moshe Rabbeinu says, you continue to do bad, pam acheres, another time, at shekaramtem lis'anefi, until you caused Hashem to be angry at me because I made a mistake, because you pushed me so many times, you pushed my button. So that's one way. So even though it's true that it's not because of the spies that Moshe doesn't go into the land, but that was the beginning, and inevitably it led afterwards to that. And then the Orach Chaim doesn't like his answer, but let's see how the Orach Chaim explains it. So if you look at the top of the page, V'hanochim, you see where it starts? V'hanochim. What's correct? Al pi divrei zechrein l'vracha sha'amru, according to what our rabbis teach us, in the posuk, V'yipchu ha'am ba'layla, that the nation cried that night. That was the night that they were crying, they were scared to go into the land. And they said, Kavu b'chiyah l'dayres, Hashem said, you cried for nothing tonight, I'll give you something to cry about. And you will cry forever, every generation. And that's why we have Tisha B'Av. And we cry every year on Tisha B'Av. And there are many terrible things over the generations that continued to happen. So you cried not for a good reason, and I will give you, unfortunately, a good reason to cry. And it explains, but there's a very fascinating thing, that it says, Kilel Tisha B'Av Haisa Shabai Necher of Abayis. Later on, what happened was the actual Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on that same night. V'amru Ay, then it says even more, Shim Haya Nichnas Moshe La'aretz, the famous beautiful idea, that had Moshe Rabbeinu himself gone into the land, V'haya Bayine Beis HaMikdash, and he would have then built the Beis HaMikdash, Lai Haya Habayis Nechrav, then the actual Beis HaMikdash would not have been able to be destroyed. Why? We say Moshe was such a tremendous tzaddik. He was the holiest of men. Whatever he built was eternal. He had that eternity to him. What's bad about that? That sounds amazing. That's the most wonderful thing. That means that had Moshe entered the land, it would have been like the time of Mashiach. Finished, there wouldn't have been another exile. But no. It says like this, the Orach Chaim explains beautifully, that's fine had they behaved themselves, right, and shown trust here, and Moshe taken them into the land, built the Beis HaMikdash, and they would have been they would have been holy enough, so to speak, to sustain a level of holiness, a level of trust that would have ensured that they remained in the land, would have ensured that they don't sin, would have ensured that Hashem won't have a reason to get angry at them. But once they sinned with the Meraglim, what it showed was that they had a big lack of trust. And that meant that had they entered the land, it would have reared up again. It wasn't a one-time thing. It means that they have a lack. And therefore, had Moshe built the Beis HaMikdash, what would have happened inevitably was that Hashem would not be able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And where would he have let his anger out on? the people instead. There's a famous concept that it says that when the Beis HaMikdash was burning, actually there's even a chapter in Tehillim that the Aruch Hayim brings, Mizmar La'asaf. It says a song to Asaf. And in that chapter, it's chapter 79, Ayin Tes, he talks about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. They burnt the Heichal. How is it a song? So he says the song is that you took out your anger on bricks instead of on people. Destroyed the Beis HaMikdash instead of wiping the Jewish people out. And therefore it says that this was an interesting thing. Because of this sin, Moshe Rabbeinu says, and you showed already that you have a tremendous lack spiritually. You weren't worthy to enter the land with me, because had I gone in, it would have been a big problem for you. I might have been eternal, my family, but not the rest of the Jewish people. And that would have been a problem. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu attributes the fact that he's not entering the land to this already at the beginning of the 40 years, which is a fascinating concept. But what's beautiful about it, it's sad but also beautiful, is that we can see within the anger and within the punishment the kindness of Hashem. That Hashem in truth doesn't want to hurt us and harm us. Rather, what he's hoping is that we will improve, that we will come closer to him, and we won't need punishments anymore. That's the goal. That's the hope. So that's what we're waiting for, as we say. So Emir Tzashem, but that's what Moshe Rabbeinu shows them here. That's how the Aruch Hayim explains it. And that's why he says also, on the bottom paragraph, in Taimar, and if you say, V'halai Ra'inu, don't we see Shemisas Moshe Haysal Mein Riva? How come Moshe died because he hit the rock? So he says, "Kvar kasafti shama." I've already written there. She in Moshe haya mekadesh shma yisbarech. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have caused a kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of Hashem's name, hoy Yisrael chayzrim l'taharasam, perhaps he could have accomplished that the Jewish people would have done such an incredible level of tshuva, and they would have returned to their original purity that they had when they received the Torah. Maybe then he could have entered the land with them. So there is the guilt is shared in a sense, but it does come back to here. But again, interestingly enough, why is the hitting of the rock considered such a severe sin? Only because of what they did here. In other words, and this is the Kli Yakar also says, if the Jewish people would have been a trusting people, then it wouldn't have been such a big deal that Moshe didn't sanctify Hashem's name over there, because they didn't need extra strengthening. In other words, if you make a small, it's also, I bring these examples up, but it's true. Like if you see with children, but you see, let's say if you have a classroom and one child calls out. Okay, if it's a teacher that has discipline and the children are generally well behaved, it's fine, nothing happens, you know, this lesson goes on. But what happens if the teacher doesn't have discipline and one child calls out? Well, then everything goes into anarchy. That's what happens immediately. So over here also, because they didn't trust, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu had to be extra careful not to hit the rock, which showed that he, because had he spoken to the rock, he would have instilled such an incredible level of trust and belief in Hashem. Look, even the rock listens, and a rock can give forth water by just being spoken to. So the Jewish people would have felt, well, how much more so we have to listen to what Hashem says. But because they weren't people who believed, therefore Moshe Rabbeinu's small little mistake, so to speak, small little slide over there, caused a terrible, terrible reaction. And that's how the Kli Yakar explains also. So it's a similar kind of thing that comes also to this. So that's why he says, it's really all because of you guys that Hashem got angry at me. Because if not, I wouldn't have been held to such a standard that I would have had to upkeep. Okay, now we go on. And then the Pesukim go on. I'm sorry, we're not going to read all inside. I always have hope that there's one more that I do want to read inside. And I'll show you that's coming to the next topic. Now, he stops over here. Okay, enough telling them off about the fact that they did this terrible sin and didn't want to enter the land. Now what happens? So if you go into page 948, look, I'll show you. Because then he goes on and he says like this. In the next few psukim, he tells that then afterwards they had to go through the desert because now they were, you know, they couldn't enter the land. But Hashem said, fine, I'll take care of you. And then Let me just see something. Oh, when he mentions the fact that some people tried to go into the land even though they weren't supposed to. And then we come to Perek Beis on page 948, chapter 2. And we see in chapter 2, now that they have to go turn around because they can't go into the land, we turned, as it says, and journeyed to the wilderness towards the Sea of Reeds, as Hashem spoke to me, and we circled Mount Seir for many days. Har Seir is actually the portion of land where the family of Esav lived. Remember we said Har Seir? That's Esav's portion, which we know now, well, later on became the Romans, the Christians. It's considered that this is the Golos that we're in now, the exile. Well, now it's a bit of borderline of Yishmael as well, but the Christian, the Roman Empire, if you want to say, even though now we're not under the Roman Empire, but we're still under the influence of the Christian, so to speak, world powers, if you want to say. But he says like this, Moshe Rabbeinu says, again, fascinating, such a magnificent thing. So he's reassuring them. But now he comes like this. He's telling them that, that they're going to be, I want to show you something beautiful. Apostle Gimel, very important. Vayomer Hashem Eli, Lamer. Hashem said to me saying, Rav lachem soive saharazeh. Enough, you're going around this mountain enough times. Pnu lachem tzafayna. Turn towards the north. Okay, they can't, it's interesting. They could, technically speaking, we did the map that time, but Seir is more towards, like on the border, I don't know what it is now, maybe it's Saudi Arabia, it's like, it's not really a border, but it's the south part of Jordan, if anything, you know, so it's sort of more the south, the other side of just before you enter the land of Israel, but more on the south. How they ended up entering, you know, is from Jericho, right, which is more, not north, but more mid-north, right, of Eretz Yisrael, right? They cross the Kinneret, right? We know. So they cross all the way the Jordan River, right? They cross more to it. That's where they, so they went around Har Seir, and then they went around Moav and Ammon, who are what we call now Jordan, right? And then they enter the land of Israel from there. So this pasuk seems just insignificant. Turn and go north. Now, I want to show you something. So this is unbelievable. This is the Kliyakar. He says, this is a message for all of us. This is not just talking. Moshe is not just talking to the people of that generation. He's talking to us up until today. Now, the Kliyakar lived also, I think it was in the 1600s, perhaps, in Prague and Lunchitz. It was interesting. It was the, what was called then, the Prussian Empire. It was like, so it's Czechoslovakia, even borderline Poland, he lived a bit. Anyways, because all the borders changed in that time. And listen to what he says. This is, he could have written it today. You would have thought that he's living today. He says like this. What is this message that you enough that you should turn north? Just let me tell you something early. The word north, tzafon, is north. Tzafon, you know, we have in Haggadah. What do we do by that one of tzafon? Now we say tzafon beirach. Just before we bench, we eat the afikoymen. But why is the afikoymen called tzafon? Because what do we do with the afikoymen? Okay, we break it, but then after we break it, we hide it, okay. Tzafun is to hide. That's what tzafun means. Actually, the north is called hidden because the sun is hidden in the north. The north has a negative representation in Torah, interestingly enough. It's like the side where all the north wind is considered the wind which brings all the illnesses. It's where there's no sun, right? It's things are hidden there. So in that sense, it's cold. Exactly right. It's cold.
It's also supposed to be where wealth will be if you live in the north.
Okay. Maybe physical wealth, but that's always a test. So we'll see. But yeah. But look, everything has a negative and a positive, but it represents this idea. Okay. I want to show you what he says about it. So he says, what should happen? He says, so Hashem is telling us, I'm not aware if you know where I am. I don't have... Okay, so on the page there's a circle around Kliyakar, but then there's a circle, the second Kliyakar, and then there's another paragraph, and then there's a gimel. Do you see that big gimel? And it says, Rav Lachem Sov Esaharazeh. I don't know if you can see it there. I'm sorry. Rabim Aymrim, Rabim Aymrim Ki Pasuk Zeh, Nuka V'yored Atahim. This pasuk is actually something which is applicable until today. V'yesh b'sha remez l'sha'ol l'dayris, it has a hint for that time and for future generations. And what is it? He says, Sibu b'zeh she'yelchu schar l'kerem Hashem. This like going around, this circling, it has to do with the fact that they are circling around the vineyard of Hashem. Let's see what that means, and they shouldn't come close. He says, Kiyamim Rabim Li Yisrael. There are many days for the Jewish people. Sheyihyu Nodim V'Noim, that they would be wandering from one place to another. Svivai V'Layutan Li Yisrael Koyach Aleihem Ad Midrach Kaf Regel. The Jewish people will not have strength, not only that, but the people inside will not allow them in. Once they're in, they get kicked out. We know how many times we were banished. This is the history of the Jewish people. When they asked over here to go into Seir, they said no. They wanted to travel through. They would have entered the land in such a beautiful, easy, direct way. Not only did they say to the people, we will not, God forbid, go through your vineyards and trample your vineyards. Remember, they said, we'll travel only on the highways. And every bit of food we will buy from you. We will not use what we have. In other words, it'll be amazing for your economy, the best tourism possible. We will not touch anything. We will not harm anybody. We will only bring you good. What did they say? No. Jews, no, you can't come in. That's what Seir said. Exactly the same as now. So he says, it's similar to wandering around and around, in and out. Sometimes we're in, they kick us out. Sometimes they don't let us in to begin with, whatever it may be. And then he says like this, and this is the representative of our exile, and says, until, until the one who is going to come, the one who it says about that he will stand with his feet on that day, Al-Har HaZaisim, the famous thing, that one of the things it says is that when Mashiach will come, he will stand specifically on Har HaZaisim, and he will announce his coming. That's why there's a beautiful thing in Har HaZaisim. Many people are buried there. It's a cemetery. But there's a beautiful idea that the people who are buried on Har HaZaisim will be the first to wake up in the time of Tchias HaMeisim. That's why many people tried their... I mean, now there's no more... I don't think you can get if you wanted to, but unless you had already in the family. I know my grandparents are buried there, but many people would have... Yeah, it's incredible. It's hard to go, but people do go. But it was a thing all the generations to be buried on Har HaZaisim. But that's where Mashiach will stand, and he will announce his coming, and everybody will wake up on Har, you know, representing. So he says, but until then, yes.
In Israel.
Yeah. So Har HaZaisim is the Mount of Olives, right outside of Jerusalem. You know, it's outside of the old city. It's beyond. It's actually beyond because of, it's considered, I think it's considered East Jerusalem, isn't it? Whatever, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, people do.
You ring up Chabad, they're incredible. And I sit down with the gun, and then
You just go with protection.
When you've got any relatives that live in the Shtetl that carry a gun,
they go with you. But you need protection.
It's such a special.
I have to go one day. I wish.
All the ones that you can go, and it's just
So, as he says, like coming back here, he says that, so the whole time that the Jewish people are going round and round, as he says, what is the message of this pasuk? It tells us a certain instruction while we are still in Golos. Pnu lachem tzafayna, turn north. What does it mean? So he says, let's show you in the next paragraph. V'inyan ha-tzafayna zu, what is this concept of tzafayn, he says. If a Jewish person in this exile, in this terrible exile, finds themselves some success, which we know does happen, Zeir, like a little bit of success. I mean, you know, whatever. It's always a bit moderate, but we do. He says, oi, what should happen? Oz yatminu, what should they do? The message here is hide it. Don't flaunt it, the Kli Yakar says. Do not flaunt your wealth. Why? V'yatzpinu hakol b'fnei Esav, and you know, show it all off in front of Esav, and you can put Esav into any name. We won't have to say, but any of the nations. Ki ein l'cha uma shemiskanas b'Yisrael k'may Esav. There is no nation that is jealous of the Jewish people like Esav. Ki l'datam, because according to their opinion, Hakol gezula biyadam. Everything that we have was stolen from their hands. It's like as if Mamish, you could think he's writing it today. Everything was stolen. Mehen, how? All the way going back from the Birchas Yaakov, from the blessing that Yaakov stole from Esav. So all the way from then, he carries that resentment. And any success that we have stolen from them. It's theirs and we stole it. And therefore he says, Shalakach, as we say, bin mirma, we took it with trickery. That's how we took the blessings. V'chein Yaakov tziva lebanav, lama tisra'u. Even Yaakov told his sons, you know, when he was living in around Shechem, that was just before the story of Dinah, right after, he said to them, why should you be seen? Don't make yourself so conspicuous. Don't stick out so much. Don't make everybody look at you. That's what Yaakov told them. And Rashi says, Bifnei. So we just thought Esav, but now we're saying, no, it's not Esav, it's Yishmael, right? We're suffering from Yishmael. Look what he says over here. The Kliyakar tells us, and it's interesting because in his times, he wasn't living anywhere near the Muslims. He was living in the Christian area, as we said, deep in Europe. And yet he knows. He knows what's going to happen. And he says like this, Bifnei b'nei Yishmael. Why Yishmael? Why was Yishmael upset with us? He says, before Yishmael and Esav, and act ki'ilu atem sveim. Act as if you are just satisfied. You have enough, and you're satisfied, and you don't have too much, and you have nothing to flaunt. Why? Ki shneihem sveim. Because both of them think, first of all, Yitzchak stole the success of Yishmael. So the Yishmaelim are also jealous. They say Yitzchak took everything from Avraham. It's true. It says he gave most of his inheritance to Yitzchak. And to Yishmael, he gave a little bit. They're jealous all the way from them. So therefore, don't flaunt it in front of them. And he says, V'Yaakov gazal hatzlachas Esav. As we know, Yaakov stole the success of Esav through, and he did it. Like, he actually tried, as we know, because he had this whole thing that he engineered to steal the brachas. So he says, Al kein tziva dafkal Esav. Pnu lachem tzafayna. That's why he say more about Esav. Go northward, he says, shalai yiskane bachem, that they shouldn't be jealous. It's a heipech. And then he says, this is actually interesting, he's like crying. He's like, he's really devastated. He says, it's the opposite of what the Jewish people, imagine then, imagine how much more so now. He says it's the opposite of what I see people doing. He says, "V'mashi Yisrael oisin b'dayres halalu in our generations, ba'artzei seveyem in the lands of their enemies. Ki misha yesh lay money. Anybody who has money, which is let's say 100, he says, who mares atzmai b'malbushei kaveri, dresses in the finest clothing, u'batim sfunim v'chashuvim, ki'ilu hayuloi kama alafim. He acts as if he has much more wealth than he even does have. And he puts on the nicest clothing and has the most magnificent homes. And he says, it's a big problem. It's a massive problem. We cannot act that way while we are still in exile, while we're still in the lands of our enemies. And he says, u'megarim ha'umais ba'atzman, v'ayivrim al masha nemar p'nu lochem tzifaya. And he says they're literally teasing on their own. They're revving up the non-Jews against us. It's almost not blaming, but he is a little bit saying that it's their fault because you're causing the jealousy. And that's not how you have to behave. And you forget what it says. Go northward. Go inward. Hide. Don't be conspicuous. Now, this is a big question because I know people say, what? That's how a Jew has to live. But I just want to finish, he says. This is this conduct, to act in a way where we don't flaunt our wealth. He says, actually, this brings tremendous bracha. And he says, and he says, interesting, that if we don't act this way, if we act, in other words, with flaunting, that brings all the negative. Hamaskilin yavinu likach musar. The ones who are intelligent will understand to take musar. In other words, to take this as it's meant to be in a way that they can apply it to their life. Now, we'll say, oh, why should we have to live like that? Let's be honest. I mean, 10 years ago, we might have said, oh, what he's saying is not true nowadays. But unfortunately, we see it's more and more and more. It's crazy. I mean, you think like your mamish replaying. I mean, I don't have to tell you what people are saying now. The Jews own the banks, the Jews own the wealth, everything. It's unbelievable. Now, okay, so we'll say it's not our fault. And it's not necessarily. I'm not saying it's always our fault. But the truth is that sometimes a little bit we do to ourselves. In other words, we do have to make sure to be careful. We have to be aware of where we are. We have to be aware of our surroundings. And we have to be aware that they are jealous. Don't flaunt it. What do you gain by flaunting and acting as if you have more wealth than you do, or even showing the wealth that you do have? What do you gain? Live well, live comfortably, give a lot of tzedakah, which is really what we're meant to do. Take care of your community, but don't flaunt the wealth. Now, of course, the hatred that they have for us is going to be anyway, we know, even when we don't flaunt, because it's not only the physical wealth, even the you know, when we're intelligent or we're the greatest scientists or the greatest whatever, and they get upset, but it doesn't matter. The point is, a little bit we can control. And this is a powerful kliyakar. As you can see, the message is even up until today. So this is a very fascinating thing. And now, and on a smaller level, we could also understand this message within ourselves, that a person, when they are lucky enough, when they are blessed enough to be given, whether it be wealth physically or even spiritually or intellectually, if they're given extra talents, extra abilities, if a person is given a gift, do not flaunt it, because all that does is arouses jealousy from other people. Now, so we say, what do we care? Because you do have to care. That's what it says. We are not meant to cause other people to have an ayin hara on us. That's not a good thing. So do the good with what you have, but to show it off is not the Jewish way. That's why one of the psukim that I mentioned on Shabbos, you know, it says the word tshuva, the tshuva, which is the month of Elul, has every letter has a different pasuk, but the last one, the hey, is hatzneya leches im Hashem aleikecha. Walk discreetly. I know they sometimes say modestly with Hashem your God. Hatzneya means do things in a way that's just between you and God. Even when you give tzedakah, even when you do a good thing, unless it's going to encourage another, that's fine. But if it's not to encourage another, if it's just because it makes you feel good, when you are able to show the good you're doing, that's not a Jewish midah. A Jewish midah is to do good in a way when other people don't see it. You know, we don't make ourselves holier than thou ever, also, in that way. Unless, again, unless it's an example and other people can learn, that's already a whole different story. But when we're doing it for our sake, for our own, it's totally the opposite. We have to know Pnu lachem tzafayna. The time went very quickly. We didn't get to nearly what I wanted to. But I'm just going to tell you quickly next week a beautiful thing. I don't know if you can come and show you something really beautiful. We'll see. Because it goes into a very beautiful idea, Moshe Rabbeinu, about a miracle that happened. And we'll see beautiful halachas that have to do when we experience miracles. I'll go through very beautiful brachas that we're meant to say, and just beautiful ideas about how we live and reflecting and re-experiencing the miracles that have happened to us and that continue to happen to us. Okay, we'll see that next week in Mirtz Hashem.
Okay. So,
yes.
I understand, because it doesn't mention anywhere there.